Do they not realise what they've done? This throwback, this, if their gold and silver markets collapse, then the jig's up for the dollar completely.
They now have to keep printing or we crash.
We've got this ticking time bomb.
Talking gold with the one and only Andrew Maguire.
Welcome to Live from the Vault.
Welcome to Live from the Vault. My name is Shane Moran, and I'll be your host for this episode. And from the entire Live from the Vault team worldwide, we want to thank you for your continued support. There's a lot to talk about, and guess what? We have Andrew Maguire in the house with a first-time special guest, Peter Granditch. You're not going to want to miss this, and we'll be talking gold. And this is going to be another amazing episode. Just before we go to our special guest, you know, we want to hear from you. We want to hear from our community. We want to hear, and we'd like to know who you would like to see as a special guest on this show. And we're really, really excited to be able to invite that guest. And so let's go over and give you a little short introduction on Peter Granditch. He entered Wall Street in the mid-1980s with neither a formal education nor training. And within 3 years, he was appointed head of investment strategy for a leading New York Stock Exchange. And it's a New York Stock Exchange member firm. And he'd go on to hold positions as chief market strategist, portfolio manager, four hedge funds, and a mutual fund. And again, he is regarded as one of the world's foremost strategists. And his ability to interpret and forecast the financial markets has earned him the moniker, the Wall Street Whiz Kid. And with that, let's head over to the UK and talking gold with the one and only Andrew Maguire and our special guest, Peter Granditch. Over to you, Andy.
Well, it is actually my privilege to have Peter here with us. And the last time that Peter and I met, we were having dinner in London in 2011 after the London Gatta show, and we were sitting there with a really wonderful group of people: Eric Sprott, Peter, Bill Murphy, Chris Powell. Oh, just too many people to mention. And it's so nice to see you again, Peter, because we haven't actually had a chance to bump into each other since.
Well, Andy, it was the single main reason why I agreed to it is so as I saw your name involved. It was perhaps one of my most enjoyable evenings to sit with the group that I was around with you and Eric and all. And I miss Bill Murphy in the worst way. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that speaks from the heart, it'll always be Bill. And so it is a true pleasure to speak with you again today. It really is.
And you talking about Bill, he was obviously a football star. You've been involved with sports a lot, haven't you, since 2020, I think it was?
Well, that's actually when I exited. What's left of what was once a very viable business, you'll see behind me, which made up a much bigger office at one time. And actually, in 2000, I got involved here in the U.S. On the financial and Christian ministry end of dealing with professional athletes and teams. But in 2020, I had to exit it because what had happened here in U.S. sports, at least, and particularly in the NFL, where I did most of my work, that the tie-in of political and social views conflicted with my personal Catholic Christian views. And it got to the point where I had to make a decision for one or the other. And I decided to leave the sports world. But you're right, Bill would always like to bring back, but he played in an era when people really played for the joy, certainly not the money. And that's the opposite now. It's all money in sports now.
Interesting. And I know that you're also an author, and there is some of your works I've read, and I think I thought it was very interesting, a biblical perspective on matters of finance. No one's ever, in my view, ever dared to enter that field before. But I think what really made me chuckle is that when you with all this wokeism about right now, I think if people bought Kids in Cash, what every parent needs to know about raising a financially healthy child. My goodness me, this is the counter to all the wokeism. Please, guys, go out and get it for your child.
Well, thank you very much. In fact, just for your viewers, they can read it for free on our website. All my writings are there, including my book. You don't have to purchase anything. But you're right. And it's sad because the children of today already had a major battle regarding money and how it's being treated. And now with wokeism, I really don't think a lot of them are going to run into issues we were blessed not to have to face when we became adults.
And really, Peter, it's really about taking personal responsibility, the ability to take personal responsibility, is it not?
Yeah, and that's what's so tough. And, you know, we're going to witness, we already are, we're going to witness for the first time, at least here in the U.S., and I have a feeling it's like that mostly through the Western world, that the next generation is not going to be better off than the past generation. You know, we had serious generations where we saw our grandparents and then our parents do better, and now we had done better. But I think the kids that are coming up today, the millennials, if you want to call it, are actually taking a step or two backwards. And it's sad to see with all the great technology and all the things the world tells us that should make us better, we're actually going to be going backwards, not forwards. But that's the way of the world where it is today.
Yeah, it is a worry. And I must say that one always hopes the next generation is going to be smarter and better than us. You know, and it's just that I think one of the things that worries me so much is the when we see a single narrative on it, across the globe, one single narrative, and it's almost as if anyone that strays from that narrative, whoever creates this narrative, is really vilified, basically.
You know, it's that way in every walks of life, including in the financial world. That, you know, as we spoke before we came on, to tie one's faith to matters of finance is not a popular, it closes a lot more doors, Andy, than it opens. Because either you're viewed as a charlatan, which there have been many who have used the faith to take other people's money, or you've been clean out in left field, or it's just something, like you said, that the narrative is no longer about faith, but, you know, about secular stuff, and you're vilified for it. And but for me anyway, and that's all I ever tell anybody, I don't try to sell it to anybody else. For me, it was paramount. In fact, I don't think if I would have found it right, I would even be here today. You know, I faced a lot of issues, as I share in my book, of fighting depression and a lot of things. I made and lost money not once, but twice. And those are just things that aren't talked about in the financial service industry. And I beat my chest about them. So I just feel for whatever natural life is left for me, that's what my calling is to do.
And that's what the family used to be about, isn't it? You'd always look to your elders. So there are many cultures that still value their elders. But I think in the West here, we tend to just shove them to the side, and they're in the way. But I mean, really, that's what you, when somebody has experience and it involves mistakes and things that they admit that they've done in life that didn't work out perfectly. And it seems like kids don't want to do that. They just want to know just the good stuff. And it's good when people can, when you talk about stuff like you do, that talks about failures. Because what is a failure? It's how to succeed. It's how to fix stuff, isn't it? It's how you move on from it.
And all the people that they desire to be, that they attest to, the so-called known and wealthy people, they all have stories about how failure was a great part of what eventually led to their great successes. So you're absolutely right.
Well, I'm going to ask you, I know there's no hold barred here, but I'm going to mention your president of the United States. And I see, you know, I'm just, obviously, there's many things we could discuss about this president, but I noticed that a couple of days ago, a day or two ago, he invited Powell into the Oval Office. I think essentially I think blaming Putin for the economic blowbacks kind of like is going on, let's just say there's the seeds won't grow. Do you think he wants to throw Powell under the bus? What's he up to?
Well, it opens a can of worms that I'll try to keep the can opener very close to the lids. But, you know, we won't talk about what happened in the election. We'll deal with the results of the election. And it's clear that they ran a campaign that was not as much vote for our guy as much as you won't want to have the guy that's currently there again. And it succeeded, okay? But in that campaign, the people that didn't want to see the guy that was there in there again, it appears now that they were willing to sacrifice a lot of things, including somebody in the right mental and physical health to sustain at a period of time when more than ever you need to be on your toes and going. And I think the compounding problem, or the problem to come from that, and I'll answer regarding Powell, is that if this person isn't able to fulfill the duties, the person that would be set to replace him is 100 times worse. So as much as they achieved what they clearly wanted to, and I'm not here to decide whether that was right or wrong, they didn't grasp how important it was the person or persons that were going to be there. And so now Biden, who really doesn't have a great record of being a clear leader. I mean, he was in politics for a lot of years, but he wasn't somebody that you can point to and say, yeah, he was a key part of getting this or that done and so forth and so on. Now, at a time when there is question of whether the United States will at least be the leader of the world going forward, there is great concern about his ability. So to kind of come in and bring in this, well, it's not my fault kind of attitude, okay, doesn't work when people are pulling in to get gas and 60% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, Andy. 40-something percent of them don't have $1,000 saved for emergencies, and you're asking them now to pay twice as much for a necessity, and it's only one of the necessities, food and others. And so I think what they're trying to do and is try to turn the emphasis that it's really somebody else's fault that this is happening. But up until now, it's always been in the United States, whoever, Republican or Democrat, the buck stopped at the president's desk. He's trying to pass that buck, and I don't think it's going to work.
And look, speaking as a Brit, I mean, your president's, let's just say what we all think, your president's cognitive condition really worries pretty much everyone I speak to, as you say, as a world leader. And he's widely seen to us as a puppet president with no bandwidth to speak on his own without handlers. And I guess the question I would have is, who the hell are his handlers?
Well, that is what people questioned. Unfortunately, it's becoming more dire. I think if you speak to people that want to be reasonable, people with medical experience, doctors that understand it, work with this, it's all the evidence that's happening. The same thing we would have said if it was our grandfather or something, we would see it developing and so forth and so on. But what people have not taken into the equation yet, even though it's been kind of managed in a sense, damage is being caused, but it's still being managed, is that if he really gets to the point where he just can't do it, even under that, the replacement is just the scariest thing I've ever known. And not because of the color of the skin or the whether female or male, but just clearly as demonstrated, could never step onto the world stage and do the act that at least Biden was able to do in his first few months as presidency. So that, I think, is a political problem to come, and also our election in the fall. It can be, because the likelihood is that the group that really has had the influence the last couple of years and was really marching way to the left, I mean, super left. And if I may, Andy, I think this could help set the stage for what else we're going to talk about. Here in America, there is no more middle ground. You either are left and far left, or you're right or really more right. And I'd say that other than our Civil War, I don't think America's been more divided, socially and politically. And now, because economics are turning down, and they're going to turn down real hard, and then it'll be a question of whether or not the Fed caves and goes crazy and becomes a 1970 South American country and just prints money like crazy again. Irregardless, the issues that are battling us are only going to get worse after the election, no matter who wins. Because if somehow it isn't a Republican take back and the Democrats hold on, then they're just going to, whatever they've done, they'll try to do 10 times more. But if they lose, they appear not to be good losers. They don't like losing. They get very antsy. So I think there's going to be a lot of trouble in America for some time to come. And that impacts the markets, including the markets I know that you and I've never been, and maybe I don't want to segue or take you away from where you want to go, but I've never been more bullish about you and I, what we spoke about 10 years ago. I've never felt the opportunity for not only capital appreciation, but preservation of capital, which people don't focus on in the U.S. in the financial service industry anymore. The gold market has become an opportunity. I certainly believe in my 38 career, the single best opportunity I've seen.
Well, coming from you, Peter, I think people should listen. And I think there's suddenly, I think I like you, rarely seen a situation like this where really the house that controls the paper market is really looks like they want to get on the other side of this trade. And it's the speculators that seem to be sucked in to this game. They're dot chasing a dot up and down a screen. But I think one of the things that really gets my attention right now is I've been looking very, very closely at the commoditization of the ruble and its impact on the precious metals market and the base metals market, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I always say, look, I'm not taking sides. I'm not condoning any war side or any violence to any human being. And it's not the point. We're trying to look at, well, what the heck is happening and how do we preserve our capital? What choices and decisions we should make? And I think, you know, suddenly we've got the nickel market, for example, really got my attention because, I mean, right after the sanction blowbacks, well, they were blowbacks, weren't very ill thought through, I think, suddenly you've got, you're exposing a quadrillion dollar derivative market, obviously comprising of multiple things. And I think it's interesting because I think all commodities are going to have to rise. And we just saw JP Morgan exit the base metal market position, providing liquidity. And I had a meeting with a first tier bank in March who said they want their silver back. What are your thoughts on this commoditization of the ruble and the commodity markets?
So when we were last together, there were experts who legitimately had the right view of saying that, hey, you know, one of these days the dollar is going to peak and all this type of stuff. And that's 10 years ago. Well, what has happened recently certainly accelerated. I would have told you, and I did say this publicly before what happened with Russia, since I'm 66 and I live in this 5 to 15 year plan, Andy, that's probably, if I was a better out there, pick Peter's death sometime between 5 and 15 years from now, I would have said to you, I'm probably not going to see the demise of the dollar, that they could keep it going and keep what we know has been props and things of that nature. I think what happened with Russia and what you brought up, these horrible sanctions, the views of, in a sense, militarizing our currency and our banking system, I think that greatly accelerated that. Even if I'm Great Britain, I have to start to think, based how I saw the United States exit out of Afghanistan since Biden came president, based how I see all the issues that are happening here, and then what we did regarding sanctions and so forth, and basically how once Russia decided to, in a sense, back its paper with some sort of real hard asset, what happened to its currency, I think we greatly accelerated the beginning of the end of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. And I think that's the major reason, and this is where you are so much more of an expert than me, and I'd rather hear you speak, but I'll just say it. That is why the central banks have continuously been buyers of gold. You know, I listen to these financial advisors here in the U.S. who, most of them, Andy, we can toss them off the top of the Empire State Building, and all the way down, they're all going to say the same thing. Hey, so far, so good. They don't have any comprehension or experience to understand some of the ramifications of things that are happening. They're just trained. They learned to drive on a one-way street. It's been aided by a Federal Reserve that made it a one-way street as they themselves were buying stocks and trading. It's not a coincidence, in my book, by the way, Andy, that the stock market peaked the minute they caught the Federal Reserve guys trading their portfolios and had to make them stop. I don't think that's a coincidence, but we can save that for another talk sometime. But the bottom line is that the dollar, which has always been the main nemesis to gold, has seen its day coming to an end greatly accelerated. And I think people are seeing that already. And the people that are upset about saying, well, gold isn't doing what it should be, et cetera, and I go, oh, excuse me, you have insurance. You've written your check for your car insurance, your home insurance, your medical insurance. And by golly, when there was a problem, you were grateful you had your insurance. Well, thank God you bought gold when it was 13, 14, 16, 1700, because you got crazy. You got into the crazy world of cryptocurrencies and stocks, and it came down and you're down 50, 60% in your NASDAQ stock. Well, guess what? You're able to take your gold and meet margin calls or use it because you want to average down. Gold is just a phenomena, and this commodity world that now here in the U.S., now I don't know how people view it in the U.K., but we had no idea until the pandemic how little we made for ourselves here, how literally everything in our life was somewhere else in the world coming from. And in a lot of places that maybe weren't the friendliest or most certain place we can count on. And now, because of what's happened with the Russia war and everything, we here in the U.S. have concluded that we're really, you know, not self-reliant. And that is an issue. And in commodities, you know, energy is obviously the clear one that everybody's seeing. But all those other things that everybody in America wants, the toys, the computers, the electric cars, well, you know, they all need certain things in order to be made. And we don't have a large supply of that. So there, this commodity push, and if I may also, and I don't want to get too far off, you brought up the nickel issue. I think what happened at the LME and all, that forever, that put a knife to the end of the manipulators. Yeah, they got away with it and they were able to do it, but I don't think anybody's going to have faith in an institution like that anymore. So I just think this whole commodity thing, I think this whole way of being fearful now of what can happen to the value of your currency and more of, we have to start thinking for ourselves attitude. If there's one thing that happened, globalization is dead, Andy. It's done. The thing that was sold 20 years ago that Wall Street loved going all around the world, getting all institutions to invest on this globalization idea, globalization is dead. And nationalism is going to become more of an issue in all parts of the world. Sorry for going on a long time there.
No, this is gold. I mean, this is gold. I mean, that this is what we need to hear, these different perspectives. And it's like, it makes us think. That's what it's about. This is about. And you mentioned, yes, the knife coming in, this nickel blow up. I mean, how quickly did the mainstream media try and sweep that under the carpet? And that was a Lehman moment. And had they not stepped in and settled it? But I guess the point, the critical point here is that while you can cash settle or halt a siloed backwater like the LME, silver, which is very much where nickel was, again, as probably the most undervalued, over-leveraged. Bloomberg reckons it's 250 to one. Jeffrey Christian said, so what, it's 500 to one. But even if you accept Bloomberg's 251, hang on, at 20 bucks, it's worth $5,000 an ounce if it was marked to market. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, while you can silo something like the nickel market in the LME, silver and gold are currency crosses. Like, as you know, as trading like the dollar and the against the yen or the yen against the euro or whatever it is, it's a currency cross. So it's one side you're long, the other side you're short. You can't, if somebody suddenly comes in and buys how many tons of silver that they can't deliver, you could have another nickel moment, but in silver. And Bill Halter, interestingly, in my last interview with Bill Halter, which I really respect Bill, said he thinks silver's the fuse to destroy the financial system because it's like it's connected at the hip to gold. And gold is probably, we reckon it's probably $15 trillion a year over the counter market. And then by the time you add derivatives, could be closer to $70 trillion. So looks like this whole game is about to blow.
So if I may, for my viewers, which will see this interview, that I will share this, I think people need to know exactly about how key you were to uncovering something that, when we talk about being together 10 years ago, some of us, the Gadders of the world, myself, and we used to battle that Tokyo Rose that used to sit at Kitco and tell us there's no such thing as manipulation, and we're all nuts and fruitcakes and hats. And even the guy you just mentioned that's still around that, you know, plays out there, Christian, people used to say, nah, you guys are nuts. And then this guy in England came out, this Andrew guy, and he exposed it. And we said, oh my God, he's a savior. This is, we knew this. And now what's happened in the last few years, how many cases have they shown and found people guilty and so forth? And yet the main media, nothing about, because like you said earlier, it's not part of the narrative. And it doesn't fit the narrative. But I just want to point out, if I may, and call it a stroke, call it whatever they want to call it. I want to commend you because I didn't have a chance to tell you. I mean, you really kicked that off. You opened a thing that had gotten away for decades. And yet, like you said, people don't realize how severe it still is, but it looks like it's ready to blow.
Yeah, and well, I mean, thank you for that. And I think, again, we're just all part of an information area. And I think GATA, thank goodness for GATA, absolutely, because GATA gave us this forum, gave us this, brought us all together, yourself, Eric Spratt, all the good minds, all the amazing minds have come together, who were all supposed to be conspiracy nuts. And yet hundreds of people came and attend these conferences and say, hey, hang on a minute, no, these things are real. And so I think we have, you know, huge thank you to GATA, a massive thank you to Bill Murphy, Chris Powell, and obviously everyone that's involved, yourself and everyone who's contributed so much to GATA. They're an amazing organization, and really, you know, take my hat off to the amount of good work they do.
If you ask me, not being involved in conferences since for almost 10 years now, if you ask me if there's any one thing or one person I miss, it was always entertaining to be around Bill Murphy. It didn't matter what was happening and so forth. And you're right, Chris Powell did was just like a Danielle fighting the great lions. I mean, it was a tremendous thing, and they were proven right. And the guy we spoke of is long gone. And the other guy, he doesn't really bring up the manipulation anymore. He certainly wouldn't want to show him his interviews from 10 years ago when he said there's no such thing as manipulation and all that type of stuff. But we need to deal with knowing it's there, but we also have to play it into the reason, which you and I know both agree, is the fundamentals besides the manipulation end. It's just screaming to own these things now. I mean, it fits into this criteria where I've used now that the despondency and depression among the average investor when they look at gold and silver, when it should be just the opposite, is screaming from a contrarian standpoint is the area that I should be focused on, not stocks and bonds. And Andy, that's what I did. I said before the end of 2021, I would be completely out of general equities and bonds. And my number one investment became gold and silver and then uranium. That's another thing that I like very much. And I think as we speak today, I think those markets, if you took my one precious thing left in my life, my daughter, you know, who will always be my little kid no matter how old she is, and said, you can only get it back a year or two from now. What did better or what didn't do as bad as the other? I would pick gold, silver, and uranium far more than general equities or bonds even.
Because they're real and they have real, I mean, this is, I mean, goodness me, I mean, you're talking about biblical provenance here. So, I mean, you can't argue it. And I think, well, you know what amazes me sometimes, Peter, is that I sometimes think, you know, we deal with a lot of good clients all over the world and have some very good Indian friends from the continent India. And you know what? What amazes me every time I visited or see them is that if you suddenly realize the average Indian farmer who is cycling down a dusty road has so much gold, probably got kilos of gold for the most part through dowries, through literally thousands of years of, they never spend this gold. They use a coin maybe to trade, but they never spend this gold. And what amazes me, and I suddenly think, goodness me, what a kind of a tectonic shift when the average American owns, what, maybe an ounce, or I don't even know, but probably an ounce of jewellery. And as you say, they're not really that, you know, people just miss the whole point of gold. But just think, if gold is revalued to an amount that is no longer paper-centric. We don't know what the price is, but it is probably a heck of a lot higher than now. And say if it was, $3,000 or $4,000, I don't know. But I mean, basically, where does that put the average Indian farmer? It puts him in a position where he's more wealthy than the average American. And it's like, and appears to have nothing. It's an interesting dynamic.
Well, here in the U.S., and that's where I can only address Andrew, we could go into any financial institution and we will find not only does the average investor, client of that firm, have little or no ownership of gold and silver, neither do the financial advisors. One of the reasons also is the average age of the financial advisor has been in the business less than 10 years. So they weren't even around during the last financial crisis, which was really a warm-up for what's coming now. That was as bad as it was. And people are now comparing this inflation thing to, Volcker and all. I said, wait a second, don't compare that. And they go, why? In 1980, we were the world's largest creditor nation. We didn't even know what a $1 trillion deficit or debt was. Now we have $30 trillion in debt. And that doesn't count our Social Security and our Medicare and our Medicaid, which people are dependent on here and all. So everybody talks to me about interest rates going up and up and up. And I say, okay, they go back to 5%. 5% is not very high compared to what they once were, especially when I looked for my first home. And I remember the lady saying, I think I can get you a 15% mortgage. But at 5% and $30 trillion, that's $1.5 trillion in interest expense the U.S. has. Hey, Andy, our best year was 2019 during Trump's time. We took in $3.2 trillion, a little over that, closer to $3.3 trillion in revenue in the U.S. At that point, we would spend almost half of our total tax income just to pay the interest here in the United States. So I listened to all these guys and gals and young folks talking about how great America can be and all this other stuff and technology and stuff. And I go, wait a minute, we're not even going to be able to barely pay our interest, let alone military and all the other stuff. How do you plan on doing that? How's it going to happen? And so the gold and the reasons to own it just have multiplied. And one last thing I have to bring up that I don't want to miss in the interview. I provided it to you, your group, and if they show it, it's great. If not, people should learn it. The single best technical chart I've ever seen on any market, is the 10-year cup and handle formation that gold has made. And it is screaming of a target, as I provided in the chart, of at least $3,000 on gold. And so many more times cup and handles move to the upside, not downside, forgetting all the other fundamental reasons to own gold. The single best technical bullish reason from a chart to own gold is before us. So like I said, it's hard to not want to own it, especially when most of the regular world is telling me, what are you, crazy? It's kryptonite. What do you want to own that for? And that's when my ears perk up and why I'm so personally exposed to and counting on capital appreciation and preservation of capital through the gold and silver market.
You know, and I look the other, and I'm sure this is the same for the U.S. or anywhere around the globe. We did a study, I think it was Money Week, I looked at it, and it was in the U.K. Back in 1958, you could buy a house for 150 ounces of gold. Right now, in 2022, and I think the price of the house was £1,800. Now it's £275,000. Right now, you can buy the same house for 170 ounces of gold. And that's after 50 years of price suppression. Can you imagine what it would be if you were saying 3,000, then it would be even less than that. So it'd probably be 50 ounces to buy that same house. So really, when people say to me, it's so volatile. No, it depends on, if you're trading a 10-minute chart, well, you shouldn't be anyway. I mean, to be honest, if you're moaning about it, clearly you're on the wrong side of it. But I mean, if you're a stacker, well, then what can you do? As you say, you can't control what the price is. You just keep averaging. Take some of your disposable income. And it's about wealth protection. You said it yourself. It's all about wealth protection. It's not about making money. It's just about making sure the hole in the bucket isn't big.
I think anybody, if they truly understand economics, realizes now there will have to be a change in the world on money. You can't have this debt explosion everywhere and just think it's going to go away. It'll eventually have to be dealt with. Even if it's not for people that are latter years or have gray hair like, you know, we now have, Andy, even if you're a lot younger, you're going to have to deal with it. And realistically, the central bankers who are still going to be influential, whether they're deserving of it or not, I'm not going to argue about it, they're the ones that still have the influence. What have they continuously, aggressively purchased? Gold. For what reason then? Why do they continue doing it? Because they may know something and not share it publicly, but they privately know that in the end, this game will end. And if it's not on their tour, whoever tour will be, is going to need something of hardness, a true hard asset to change whatever has to come. And if you look at it, think about the two countries that have been the biggest buyers of gold, China and Russia. They are the ones that are likely going to be the cause and reason for this change in the world monetary system.
As you say, to them, it's alchemy revisited. I mean, you know, you're taking a paper price and you're converting worthless money, fiat currencies, into something physical like that at this price. And everyone knows, and Russia and China have known for many years, that the gold price is suppressed. So, you know, obviously, so what are you going to do? You look at the gold price and you say, well, I've got some spare dollars here, I've got some spare rubles. Well, of course, it will just purchase the physical and we'll take it off the market. And as you say, there comes a point at the margin, because it's at the margin, everything's so heavily leveraged. At the margin, you take those few ounces more out. It's like the straw that broke the camel's back. You take those few ounces out where this derivative pyramid is balancing on less and less and less, then the whole thing topples. And I think this whole sanction blowback and this commoditization of the ruble, the we know for certain that China, that Russia is discounting oil 30%. You can pay for it in gold, so it means people are buying gold. And these are the same guys with Cayman accounts, JP Morgan's, all of these guys are all in on this trade. For sure they are. And they've hidden their Cayman accounts for multiple years. And of course, you know, so basically what they're doing is, even if it's not just them, globally, physical is being taken to buy cheap gold, oil, which is then sold back into the marketplace. Now, what's happening to this gold? It's being sold to China for rubles. And it's a win-win-win, this whole thing. But what's happening through this whole process? It's happening so quickly. It's not like we're just progressing along slowly along this unwind of paper to physical. Suddenly, like the nickel market, a wrench has been thrown in. And it's their own doing. They've thrown in ill-conceived sanctions that are really going to cause people to starve in certain countries. It's going to cause... it's going to cause a complete upset. And they've not seen that the gold and silver markets, I guess the Fed doesn't know anything about gold. Daniela Di Martino Booth said, they know nothing about it. They never talk about it. Do they not realize what they've done? This throwback, this, if their gold and silver markets collapse, then the jig's up for the dollar completely.
I think what's interesting in his real latter stage of his life, the person that really kicked all this off, this printing of money without any real care and flooding the system, was Alan Greenspan. He's the father of the change of and making fiat currency a way of life. You know, Bernanke increased it because he was faced with a financial crisis and he felt there was no other choice. But I find it interesting that both of them, particularly Greenspan, now only when it comes to gold, they only say things positive or they don't say anything at all. And it's interesting that once these guys are out of the central banks, even recently Fed governors that left 2, 3, 4 years ago, who may have also been trading their personal accounts like the guys that were caught, they all have become more favorable now towards the gold market. So I, like I said, I think all things are indicated. And if the good Lord allows me and you to speak again in 12 months or maybe 24 months at best, we're going to see a much higher gold and silver price. I'm certainly have bet the ranch on that. And, you know, after 38 years being around this and learning how to lose money as much as make money, I think I made a pretty good bet.
Absolutely. And really, you're also helping to educate people. It's like this is so important. And I think the last question I would ask, if it's not too personal, what would you choose? I know you're not advising people what to do, but if you had a choice to buy gold or physical gold or silver right now, would there be any weighting? Would you be rather more in gold than silver? What do you think that anything that, what would you do? I mean, forget what other people would do. What would you do?
So I'll tell you what I have done, because it's interesting to tell you how bullish I came until last year when I decided that I didn't want any general equities or bonds, and I felt, you know, cash, and then I used most of that cash to buy gold and silver and mining shares and things of that nature. I only used to buy gold and silver or anything related to it for capital appreciation. Hey, I don't care about all this stuff. I don't need it to have bread in case there's an end of war or get something out of my log cabin in the woods. But now I think you have to take that as part of the reason to own it. You have to treat it as an alternative to paper currency. You have to be concerned like that Indian farmer that when the world does hit the mess that we talked about, you're going to want to have that. Your paper is not going to be the answer. I wouldn't get too much about one versus the other argument. Retail or the individual tends to talk about silver because retail always likes quantity over quality, no matter what it is in anything. They'd rather buy 10,000 shares of a dollar stock than 1,000 shares of a $10 stock. It's always quantity over quality. So that's why they tend to go to silver, because it's much less in a price. But I think the smartest and fairest thing is to be evenly balanced. When it goes, they're both going to go. And you know what? If one goes up 300% and the other one only goes up 260%, I'll go like this. Okay. So I would point out is this, and I think this is the reason why there's still negative sentiment when you see the average group that still even takes the time to talk about gold and silver, because they also own mining shares and they also own junior mining shares. And that market has been just a debacle. So their negativism is that their savior should be, if gold would only go up $300, these junior stocks would rise and I can get out of them. That's, it kind of falls onto suppressing what really is a bullish view for gold and silver alone. So what I would advise, if I was still in the business, don't get caught up in that. Look at gold and silver as a physical ownership first. Get what you think is appropriate for you and your family. Then if you have excess risk-oriented capital, then look at mining shares and even down the food chain, down to these junior stuff and all in all. But having ownership of gold and silver now is absolute paramount. I think American advisors are doing a disservice for not considering it, and they should own it and hope guys like me and you are wrong. And if we're right, what would be 3 or 5% currently in some crazy technology stock? Let me put my client in this physical bullion and hope the Andes and Peters of the world are wrong. And if they're right, so be it. If they're wrong, hey, we bought some insurance. We're glad we didn't have to use it.
Absolutely. And if you don't, as you rightly said earlier, so what if you don't need that insurance? You have it. And it's a great comfort to know that you've actually been, I mean, life is like that. You never know what's going to come around the corner. None of us can predict it. And it's always good to have some form of hedge in place, whatever it might be, in life or in money or in anything, really. But, you know, Peter, I just so have to thank you so much for giving us, you know, your sage advice, your thoughts. They are so much appreciated. I know that people will look to you and say, you know, there's experience. And these are things that, you know, that run around our heads all the time. Is it this? Is the dollar doing this? You know, what should we be doing? Well, what's Peter doing? I think that's really important for people to know. And, you know, there it is. It's like going back to, and we've all got grey hair. It's like going to your granddad and saying, what should I do, granddad? You know, it's like, to me, it's that kind of a thing. And I think people will look to it and say, that's a great episode. Thank you very much for coming.
Well, let me also say this then, Andy, as my fee for taking time to speak to you. You know, Milton Berle was one of the most famous comedians worldwide. And one of his fame was is that he stole other guys' comical jokes, changed them a little, whatever, and became a great comedian over it. I knew because of my background and all, I was never going to be the smartest or even close to the smartest guy. But the thing I did learn right away is hang around the smart people. So it has been a pleasure to speak to you again. I can't tell you how valuable you were in the past, and I think you will be extremely valuable in the future, because I think you're one of the few voices that has seen through the curtain and looked in the back, and like we saw in The Wizard of Oz, he's not the greatest there, and there's some real unfortunate surprises coming to the world. So I want to just tell you and take the time here, because like you said, this is just two old friends having a chat again, but it was really worthwhile, and I want to encourage my viewers, the people that still follow me, to make your work part of, and I've enjoyed hearing from you, and I know, please God, we'll have another chance, and maybe even to be somewheres where Bill and Chris and you and I can have one last chat at a pub and talk about old Tokyo Rose and wonder where he is today.
God bless that thought. I love that idea. That is a great thought. And thank you so much, Peter. And I know this will be well received, but thank you so much.
All the best. God bless. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Andrew McGuire and Peter Granditch, for another fascinating discussion. And don't forget, we want to hear from you, our Live from the Vault community, on who you'd love to see as a special guest on this show. And we want you to have your say on who you'd like to see. So just click on the link in the description below, head over to our Twitter, and just simply reply to the tweet by putting in your dream Live from the Vault guest, and we'll be keeping a close eye on the results. And remember, buy physical and understand the difference between what Andy affectionately calls the casino, paper and gold, silver markets, and what actually is the physical gold and silver markets. They're not the same. Don't be fooled. And so with that, there you have it, another episode. And with that, we'll see you next time on Live from the Vault. See you then.